Not the court. 30 or 40 minutes.
Not a good idea. Most people... Morning, I'm Bob. I'm an alcoholic. Sober through the grace of God and AA and sponsorship to the 10th of December, 1967, and for that I'm very grateful. Very special. That talk was very special. There is something powerful for me when I travel to another country and I see our principles. I get so used to having AA so available to the meetings and to people who are familiar with the book and lots of sobriety. But when you go to another country with another language and another culture and you see the same steps, the same traditions, the same story, the same feelings, and they transcend the differences, it makes it more powerful for me. And that story did that wonderfully well. Thank you very much. Last night I felt a little spacey. I mean, the experience was wonderful. Everything about this weekend has been great. So you wonder what you want to talk about, and I guess what I want to talk about is recovery, and you know what we're doing today, why we're doing it today. We are a flawed group of people. We just are. And we don't lose those flaws in recovery. But in a significant way, they get diminished and the damage they do gets greatly lessened. But I don't see a hell of a lot of evidence that they get totally gone. First of all, I don't see any human beings that are not flawed, period, end of story. So if we stand up here and say, I found a total solution, everything in my life is okay, I think that we're kidding ourselves a little bit. Life is difficult, and there's going to be aspects, and that's why we need meetings, it's why we need the program, it's why I'm still active after 40 years, not for just the drinking problem that I had. I'm active today to maintain my spiritual condition. When I maintain my spiritual condition, when I'm in meetings with you, I'm connected. I know who I am. I know what my life is about. I know what I'm doing. I'm more at peace. Happiness, which I think if you grab most of us in a big hurry and say, what do you want out of life? Most of us would say happiness. As we use that word, happiness is conditioned on circumstances being okay. Circumstances don't remain okay for a long period of time. Peace and joy are not contingent upon circumstances being okay. You can have peace and joy and equanimity at times of great difficulty. All of us know, I've got a couple of men that are close to me in my life right now that are dying. One has probably less than a year to live, and one just got diagnosed, and it looks like he's got about a year and a half. They have peace and joy in their lives. They would rather not die. They don't like the circumstances. They don't like the chemotherapy. They don't like the expense. They don't like, you know, if they had to vote, they'd vote out of the process of having the illness. But they're okay. And in many cases, they're more okay than some of the other men I work with less difficult circumstances. So last night I said, one of the great shocks to me as I got older is I would have assumed if I had, you know, is how difficult we find change, how afraid of change we are, and how most of us avoid it in serious ways. And it's kind of a dichotomy because I don't know that we could find a more powerful example of change than the initial recovery we have when we walk in the program. I don't know how you could see, I mean, you can see it physically. We walk in here, you know, people talked about Charles and about what he was like 8 or 9 years ago and what he's like today, you know, what a difference that was. So most of us come in here a mess. Every area of our life is under pressure. It's not working. We're physically, spiritually, and socially a mess, emotionally a mess. We come in and something happens to us. And all of a sudden, when someone really buys into the program, they look different. They are different. They see the world differently. They interact with you differently. That surrender experience alters how they see the world. And the changes that we make in the first 1 or 2 years of recovery are astounding. Just astounding. We change who we hang out with. We change our work patterns. We change some of our behavior patterns that we can't maintain our sobriety if we don't change some of those patterns. What we're interested in changes. Who we want to talk to changes. Our attitude, it's all different. And it is not a small difference. It is night and day different. But I would report to you that that's not enough. Now, I don't know, it can't get any better than that. It can't get any greater than that. It can't get any more than that, especially in the early part of our sobriety. But most of us then kind of flatten out. We make this tremendous growth spurt, and then we kind of flatten out. And even if we're pretty active members of AA, that was my experience. I was going to a lot of meetings, working with people, you know, working the steps, doing the things that I was supposed to do. But as I started to go forward in my sobriety and go forward in my life, I ran into the issues of my life. I ran into the defects of character and unmanageability that I did not address and wasn't able to identify, or if I identified them, I wasn't able to address them in early sobriety. If we don't address some of those things, we are not going to have a complete life. We aren't going to be able to maintain relationships, and that's about all life is. We live our entire life in relationships. Work, marriage, significant others, children, parents, our community within AA, without AA. I mean, it's all there is, baby. My spiritual advice is life is the school. Love is the lesson. The world will keep presenting to you, so when they say, what do I do in life? Chop wood and carry water. What does that mean? It means to me that all I have to do is live life and be open to what life presents me, and I will be, and life, God, the universe, Buddha, will push in front of me what I need to attend to. It does not go away. It is relentless. You can move to Bangkok, and it may follow you to Thailand from wherever we move to. We joke about that, but I mean, really, that old thing about I moved and then I found out I brought myself, it is. But this morning when I was having a conversation with 3 or 4 men at breakfast, someone said, well, then what do you do? I mean, if you know what you need to do, and you know what's wrong, and you kind of even know how the program might relate to what the difficulties that you're having in the program, but you can't get yourself to do it, how the hell do you do it? Well, you've just described the dilemma that all human beings have. Most of us cannot and are afraid to fully engage ourselves and open ourselves up to what we think the universe would have us be. We think life would be no fun, we'd never get laid again, I won't make any money. Whatever restriction we see on being more in tune with the universe, we don't want to open ourselves up to. Most of the serious problems that we have in our lives today are solutions to previous problems. Most of the serious problems we have in our life today didn't start out as problems. They started out as solutions. Alcohol and drugs were solutions. They allowed us to reduce the pain. They allowed us to distract ourselves from issues and stuff that we could not attend to. The problem we have is that we were unwilling, for whatever reason, to be present to the way life was and the way we were in it. And the way we dropped out was by dumbing down. And we dumbed down with booze and drugs. Today, the way we get a relief from the pain, and the pain doesn't go away, baby. I mean, that's the thing, that's the problem we're faced with, is you start recovery and all of a sudden the release that you had from it is gone. And to some degree, as we start to wake up, we now have to be in front of ourselves and it. And most of us have this profound sense that it's not okay and I'm not okay. I don't know where that came from. I had that feeling since I was a little kid. And I think a lot of us have this hole in our belly and this sense that we're not okay, and if you knew me, you really wouldn't. You know, we just have a sense. We have a sense of not belonging. That's the ego, the separator. And the answer, you know, and we've got an answer to that in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and the answer is to get spiritually grounded, to get connected to your higher power, to, you know, lose that sense of separateness. And therein is the balance that we have all the time. So how do we change and grow in Alcoholics Anonymous? Our 12 steps said, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. And that's how we change. Change is not as much due to effort, and it is not as much due to information as we think it is. So you talk to most people, and they, you know, every once in a while when I give a talk, someone likes to talk, they say, oh God, that was terrific. I'm going to go right back now and do another fourth and fifth step. And I'm going to inventory this area of my life that I think I need to attend to. In 9 cases out of 10, they do not need to do a fourth and fifth step. They are missing no information. They have had all the information about that arena of their life for about 15 years. But we go back to that because we're comfortable with that process. I think the ego says, yeah, do that. Go inventory that. But get this straight. We're not changing. Okay. Go talk to your sponsor. You can even let it out at the group. But we're not changing. Do whatever the hell you want to do. But we're not changing. And I don't want to give you the impression that I am free from this dilemma. You know, I'm 40 pounds overweight and I smoke. I am missing no information about what God wants me to do, what I think is in my best interest to do, and what I should do. I'm missing no information. I'm just unwilling or unable at the moment to deal with that in a more effective manner. I intend to deal with that in a more effective manner. I have in the past dealt with it in a more effective manner. And I intend to, as I go forward, to deal with it in a more effective manner. Right now, I'm not. There aren't any people who deal with everything in life all the time in a perfect manner. We just aren't constructed that way. But as I talked to my sponsees, I said, look, I don't want my flaws to be your permission not to attend to what you need to attend to in life. There is a priority. If you've got crap going on in your life, for instance, that's illegal, that would be a good ranking of things to get the hell out of your life. Okay. And the next ranking of things to get out of your life are things that are physically or emotionally hurting, seriously hurting the other people in your life. If there are abuse issues or anger issues or something like that where we're really hurting someone else in our lives, very high ranking. And of course, we'd like to get at the things that hurt yourself. And you do that. So, lately I've been having this idea. I feel like in some ways we are like a petrified log when we get to the end of the story that, what was the gentleman's name who talked? Okay, I am in trouble saying that. But the gentleman who talked this morning, when we first come in, we are frozen. We don't get it. We don't think, you know, we've got all this evidence standing in front of us, and we don't get it. We are about as zoned out, about as unconscious as someone can be. So we're a petrified log brought in to the bonfire of Alcoholics Anonymous. There is a connection, almost like a plug in the wall, that gets plugged in. And I thought about that at the meeting when I was at the men's meeting or the, at the group meeting here in Padilla. There's a collective consciousness. If I go into that meeting and I put my plug in the wall, I now have access to all the minds in the room. It's like we are all one mind. When someone talks, it's us talking. It's their particular personal view of what they're looking at, but we're all in that communication together. It is not 30 people. It is almost like one mind. There is a collective consciousness. What we do so well in Alcoholics Anonymous is we see that broken person come in the room, and we see something for them they cannot see for themselves. And we hold that consciousness for them until they start to see it, and the moment they can start to see it, we can tell. We can see your eyes are different. The way you dress is different. The way you are in the group is different. Something's happened to you. We can start to see you plug in. So that I want to get that idea of plugging in. But as we bring our petrified log to the consciousness of the bonfire of the universe and the bonfire of the meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, it starts to thaw out. It comes alive when we start to put our plug in the wall, and it gets reinvigorated. But our wet log, I love what Jerry said the other day at the meeting when we were talking about the burning bush experience of Alcoholics Anonymous, and Jerry says that he would like to put the plug in for the smoldering twig experience that he has. And that's what we do. I bring my wet log to the meeting, and little by little it starts to dry out. And then it starts to smolder. And then it starts to catch fire. We have, in Alcoholics Anonymous, fire starters. We have people who can take the message, almost like E.T., and touch you, and you get the message. It is, well, I'm going to take just a minute to tell the fire story. You know, the Anthony DeMello, a man who's in my background, talked about the man who invented fire, and he went all around the world giving people the gift of fire. And they were very appreciative. He went to the caves and taught them how to cook their food, light their caves, and warm themselves by the fire, and they went to thank him. He was gone. He didn't want the thanks. He just wanted to give them the gift of fire. But as he started to go to other places, some of the elders of the villages that he would go to were jealous of him and didn't like it, the attention he was getting, so they killed him. But in order not to suffer the consequences of putting that man to death, they took the tools that he used to make fire and put them on an altar. And they took a picture of the man and put it above the altar. And they held regular ceremonies in honor of the man who brought fire to the village. And they were very well attended. But no one ever again made fire. We have the gift. Our 12-step work with one another is I was touched by a fire maker when they made the 12-step call on me. Those men simply told me their story and touched me, and they lit my pilot light. They lit my pilot light. And that's what we do for each other. We light each other's pilot light. And if we keep attending, we get dried out and we start our own fire and we start to raise our consciousness. So as we do the work in Alcoholics Anonymous, now understand the first part of it is not drinking, not using, attending meetings, getting a sponsor, going through the steps and doing all that work. But as we go through the steps, what happens to us is our consciousness expands. The way we got relief from pain, which doesn't go away, before, was by dumbing down. The way we get relief today, if we don't use the steps in spiritual growth, television, gambling, sex, buying things, eating. I mean, there's 100 different ways to drop out. Some of them are benign and not very damaging, and some of them are pretty, you know, we are people that have patterns of compulsion and obsession, not you, but some of us. And it causes us great difficulty. So it isn't about getting perfect. It is about becoming who we are intended to be in our own lives. It is about coming home. It is about becoming us. So after 10 years of sobriety, someone says to you, my God, the changes that have happened in your life. Now, there's been a lot of changes. But in some ways, you could say to that person, what you see today has always been there. I just was unable to bring it forth on a consistent basis in my life. Everything that is happening to me today, I had the germination of 20 years ago, but I couldn't put it consistently in action. Today, because of the program and because of the steps and because of the community and because of sponsorship and because of the meetings, I am able to maintain a level of consciousness. I am more awake. I still have anger issues. I still have money issues, but I don't strike children. I'm self-supporting through my own contribution. I'm able to maintain a relationship with my wife. You know, I don't have the damage that on an ongoing basis that I used to regularly have in my life, even though I didn't intend it. Why? I'm more awake. I see it. See it or be it. When you didn't see your alcoholism and your drug dependency, you were it. So what happened to me when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I had a surrender experience, and I stood naked in front of my alcoholism and saw it in a way that I had never seen it before, and I never drank after that day. You know, I had those two little slips early, 1 month and 3 months, but someone said, once you go to AA and you see it, your drinking is never the same. At 7 years of sobriety, I stood naked in front of my life, and I saw my gambling, my money spending, my work issues, my fear, my issues with my children, I saw them as they were. And I started to attend to them in a more open way than I had ever attended to them before and availed them to the help and support and the values that were available to me in the steps. See it or be it. So what happens to us in the process of continuing the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is that we grow in consciousness and we become more awake. As we're more awake, we don't do the things that we did in our sleep. It just falls away. The people who don't understand that we have this horribly serious addiction, and they think we're doing it with effort, willpower, and information. I don't think those words are powerful enough to describe how we're doing it. Is there some effort involved? Yes. Is there some information involved? Of course. But in some ways we want to say to them, we're not doing it. I mean, the book on page 85 says it's like it's being done for us. I'm not trying to do this. It's like the problem's been removed. But we don't act like the rest of our problems in our life will be removed if we really practice the program. We act like we need to inventory them. Now, I'm not against, we do need to inventory them, but we act like we need more information, like there's stuff we have to do, and if we do the stuff right, the magic will happen. It's far more a matter of the heart than it is a matter of the head. The steps are not mechanical, even though sometimes it's worthwhile doing them mechanically. If that's the only way I can do the steps, I'll do them mechanically. But I often, when I'm just doing them mechanically, I often don't get much results. But I'm a practitioner of the steps, and I keep trying to do them to the best of my ability. But every once in a while, I summon something inside of myself that is beyond just the surface effort that I sometimes put in the program. And what is it? Well, it's surrender. Remember Chuck C., who's a well-known old-timer in Alcoholics Anonymous, and He was going to go give a talk at an alcohol symposium, and he didn't very often do things that weren't straight AA, and this was all the experts in alcoholism going to the Peaceful Conference in Atlanta. I remember he went to it, and then I saw him at another conference about a couple months later, and someone said, "How was that conference with all the experts on alcoholism? What did you think of them?" And he said, "They don't know much about surrender." Now, what you'd like to do, that's the problem for all of us. What you'd like to do when the sponsee comes over to your house or you're not dealing with your thing, you'd like to be able to touch them and have them surrender. But surrender is an action of God. It's a spiritual action. We don't own it. We don't control it. We have trouble describing it. We can direct a person towards it. And every once in a while, we have those magical conversations when we're with each other, when it happens in our presence, when the words come through us that we didn't have never said before and we didn't even know what they were, and the magic occurs in that conversation, and we have the privilege of observing the grace of God, the power of the universe come through that communication and alter the people who are having that communication. So every once in a while, I'm more able to bring a level of honesty, a level of surrender, a level of openness, a level of humility to the process of my involvement in the 12 steps. And when I am able to bring myself in that way, big things happen, not small things. So we're not going to get perfect. You have within yourself a value system that will serve you very well. You just need to access it. You are, I believe, on an ongoing basis, and this will sound kind of rash, God in drag. I don't mean that as a joke. I mean that you are God in drag. And what the spiritual side of the program is, what there is no side to it, our access to that. And we get in touch. Every once in a while we get in touch that we are, in essence, spiritual people having human experiences rather than human people searching for a spiritual experience. The experience that you're intended to have is somewhat more individualized than you might even think. You don't have to give up who you are. You don't have to give up your personality. You don't have to give up joy. You don't have to give up many of the things that will fulfill and enhance your life. You don't have to give up prosperity. You don't have to give up sex. You don't have to give up money. But a lot of us have built a toolbox in life. And when your only tool is a hammer, everything looks like a nail. And it isn't that we intended to go through life picking different size hammers and only having hammers in our toolbox. But I think that the issue that we have is we keep going back to old solutions, that we have hammer, under answer rather than problem. We filed it a long time ago under answer, and it's still under A, not under P. And we, if we would just open ourselves up to our increased consciousness that happens to us as we take the steps and go through the changes and become more awake, when we are awake, we see that our little treasures that we've been clutching to our bosom are dog turds wrapped in gold tinfoil. They are not treasures. They are not answers. They are not what we need anymore. And when we see that with the clarity that we had not seen it before, we simply let go of them and they disappear. Much like when we surrendered in our drinking and drugging, we let go of it and it disappeared. But because there's a hole in the bucket, we need our daily bread. not our annual bread, not our monthly bread, not the stuff that we did 2 years ago that will sustain me today. We get a little rubber on the tire. I'd like to think at 40 years of sobriety I have more rubber on the tire than I did when I had 10 years. But it will not permanently sustain me. If I don't take care of it, I'm going to need a retread. All the rubber can come off on the road, and I'm going to be on the rim again, and I don't want to go back to being on the rim. So I try to keep some essential activity in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous with my sponsor in meetings and in the book that sustains my spiritual condition. And when I'm sustaining my spiritual condition, I feel connected and I'm present and I'm able to attend to what's going on in my life in this moment. And in this moment, for most of us in this room right now, it's okay. Right now. It's always okay in the moment. The ego never lives in the moment. It runs from the past towards its salvation in the future, and it ignores the power of the presence. And the only place we can access the increased consciousness that is available in the steps is now. I have so enjoyed being with you this weekend. Michael, with some jest, has talked about this being a holy place. This has been a holy weekend. It has been. We have connected with each other in a powerful and nice way. For my wife and myself, thank you.